Still it is. But it was never, according to their policies, you know, if you're going to terminate a long-term foster placement because of discrepancies in the family should be given at least a written list of why the child is to be removed and a chance to reply to them. And it was never done. We had nothing, we had no way to use the grievance procedure because there was nothing to grieve.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Okay, if not, Mr. Harrison, thank you very much for your patience this afternoon, and your written comments are, of course, made a part of the record, and we're glad to hear that in your situation, at least, you were able to resolve it, but appreciate you coming forward with this. Okay, we have Ms. Darder.
Unfortunately, being a psychological parent doesn't mean a whole lot. I maintain that the bond of being a psychological parent and having nurtured a child for 13 years for me now is every bit as strong as a biological bond. To me, there has not been any difference just because I did not give birth to those children. I do have two natural children who are 7 and 8 years old, and the feeling in my heart is no different from any of the four. It's all the same. 3 years ago, I got divorced. My stepchildren at that time were 11 and 12 years old. For the last 3 years, I have been trying to get custody of those stepchildren, and I have gotten virtually every door slammed in my face. My stepdaughter started being sexually abused by her father when she was 7 years old. At that time, I was an eyewitness. I walked into the bedroom in the middle of the night and found her father doing oral sex on her. Both of the kids, both of the stepkids, have suffered tremendous emotional torment. My stepson is 14 years old. He has been wetting the bed for the last 4 years. He's been classified as learning disabled, and he's reading at a second grade level. All of this is further aggravated by the fact that in the last 3 years since I got divorced, my ex-husband has moved these kids 12 times in 3 years. This makes it almost impossible for me to keep track of where my stepchildren are at. It also makes it impossible for them to maintain any kind of a semblance of a family life. They have no close friendships, either with their peers or with adults. They change schools 3 or 4 times a year. And for a kid who's learning disabled, this is critical. At the time I got divorced, I started seeking legal help, as Pascal said. I should also point out that for the last 2 years that I was married, my ex-husband did not work. I was putting him through school, and I was the only support financially for the family. But like Pascal said, that doesn't mean anything. I have the financial responsibilities, but I have no standing in court to get custody or visitation. In a regular divorce case, kids that are 11 and 12 years old are at least asked who they would like to be with. Stepkids in the position of mine are not even given that preference, even with the track record of this emotional and sexual abuse. Their feelings have never been taken into consideration. My stepdaughter has told counselors at her different schools. She has told juvenile court representatives that I have sent out to see her. She made it known that she wanted to live with her mom. But it didn't do any good. I have seen 7 different attorneys, and every single one of them told me to forget it. They said, just give it up. Don't try. Just forget about your stepchildren and forget and concentrate on getting your own life together and raising the 2 kids that you have left. I have not been able to get in front of a judge to present this kind of evidence because I have had no standing in court. Now, the kids have been moved all these different times, and my ex-husband assumes no responsibility for his past actions or present actions. He has not been good at all about notifying me, letting me know where the kids are. Out of those 12 moves, twice he let me know where they would be. And that was only in the last 6 months. Every one of those times, I had to rely on the stepkids either calling me when they were not supposed to because their dad had ordered them not to. So they have been put into a position, along with me, of sneaking around, which is not good. But if it's the only way that we have to keep a bond going, then I'm not going to dismiss that. They've called me from school to let me know where they were going to be, and 6 or 7 of those times I have found them just by using common sense and trying to figure out where would he go next or what neighborhood would he be in. I have spent thousands of dollars on attorney fees. I have set precedents in the courts in Marion County twice. It still hasn't done me any good. I've gone through miles and miles of bureaucratic red tape to get here today. I have gone through juvenile court, family court, district attorneys, deputy district attorneys, Marion County, Polk County, because a lot of these moves were back and forth between those 2 counties. Last fall, my stepkids began to fit into another pattern that Pascal outlined for you. They got caught breaking into people's cars and stealing the contents in the middle of the night. Living with their dad, they have no supervision, they have no limits, they have no boundaries. They would sneak out of his house in the middle of the night and go and break in cars and steal things. So now it's coming back into courts, like Pascal said, through other avenues. We're going in through juvenile court now. They've each done community service and they've had to write essays. I didn't raise these children to turn out this way. And I'm really angry at the system that has put this kind of a wall between us. Now, last fall, they did psychological evaluations on myself, my stepdaughter, and my ex-husband. Dr. Gary Nielsen here in Salem did these evaluations. The evaluation for my stepdaughter came that she is now 15 years old. He said that it's a critical time for her now. She's had so much abuse happen to her in the past, and that it's imperative that she stay in a stable atmosphere. No more moving around. He said the next year for her is either make it or break it. Since then, now my ex has moved her 3 more times. She's gone to 3 different schools since then. This is an 8th grader. I don't know how much kids can take. I don't know how much they can keep getting put through. Now it's almost out of the hands of anybody here in Oregon because last December my ex moved to California. So now there's 1,100 miles between my stepchildren and I. And I'm really angry with the system that has dragged this out for 3 years. I promised my stepchildren that I was going to help them. I promised them that I would get them back with me. And it hasn't happened. It's all turned out to be empty promises. Since my ex moved to California, right now, I don't even know where my stepkids are living. The last place I knew that they were living, there were 10 people living in one four-bedroom house, 6 kids and 4 adults. This isn't the kind of an environment that kids are going to thrive in. I think he has moved one more time since then. My stepkids have not called me to let me know for sure. It's harder for them now because they can't get to a phone because long-distance calls show up on bills. And they end up in a lot of trouble from him for calling me and trying to keep any contact going. But if my stepkids fit into another pattern of statistics and run away from home in California and come to me here in Oregon, and I have no doubt that they are going to reconnect at some point in the future. I'm not worried about that. What I am worried about is that if they run away here and come to me tomorrow in Oregon, I have to turn around and send them back to their dad again. I still don't have any legal standing in court to have them stay with me. If the bill passes and they run away from home, at least then I can get it into a court here and a judge can have that option of making that decision. I've been in touch with CSD for the last 3 years. I've gotten no cooperation and no help. At the time I first contacted CSD, I had filed for divorce in August of 82. My ex didn't move out until later that month. During that time, I came home from work after working a graveyard shift, and on a Saturday morning I walked upstairs and my two natural children and my stepson were watching cartoons. And I walked into the bathroom and my ex-husband had just gotten into the shower with my daughter. She was 12 and a half years old. 5 days later, I went to CSD with her to give them her testimony, and they told me that that wasn't enough, that nothing had actually happened, that I had intervened too soon. If I had waited until he'd actually touched her, then they would have done something. I think she's been through enough. And I'm glad that I was able to intervene when I did. But I don't understand a system that won't take the past abuse that he has done to her already into consideration when they make some kind of a judgment here. I want the bill to go through because I know there are other people out there. There are other step-parents that are in positions similar to mine. If it goes through here, I can take it to California and I can start all over again down there. I don't know whether I have the emotional strength to keep this up. I've been doing this for 3 years now. But I haven't stopped now, and I want my stepkids to know, even if I don't see them until they're 21 years old, I want them to know that I didn't stop. That I didn't ever just give up like those 7 attorneys told me to do. I want them to know that if it took a law to protect them and get them back with me, that I was willing to do everything that I could to get a law made that would protect them and protect other kids that are in the same position. I think that's all I have to say.
Does anybody have any questions?
Well, we do, of course, have a copy of your statement, and that'll also be made a part of the record. Any questions for Ms. Darter? If not, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Karen Pearson, CSD.
Testimony, which you are now looking at, was really prepared in opposition to the bill as it was originally printed. As you will notice, most of our opposition was to the preference that was stated in the bill as it related to children who are in our custody. The amendments that were proposed today, we've not had a chance to analyze, but just looking at them, it seems like that would take care of our major concern as it affected our business. I would point out one concern that I have, this is off the top of my head, and that is there is no definition in the new amendments of what constitutes a child, parent-child relationship, which would seem to leave the door open to most anyone, a school teacher who might have such a relationship, a daycare provider, a neighbor, and perhaps that would be the legislature's intent, but I think that is a factor you should look at. The original bill at least had a definition in Section 3 as to what constituted a lasting relationship, a child relationship. Thank you for hearing me. Are there any questions?
Okay, I guess maybe what we should ask you to do is, if you do have a copy of that amendment and want to review it in-house and follow up with some further written material, that would be helpful to us.
We'd be happy to do that.
Can you tell me, Ms. Pearson, where in the law do we define foster parent? Is that defined anywhere? Or?
Yes, it's in the 418 statutes, and I'm sorry I'm not very good on numbers, but there is a statute that defines the requirement to be licensed when a person who's not related to a child is required to be licensed or certified as a foster parent.
Okay, I think your statement is that foster, in the written remarks, is that foster care is used as a short-term support while services are provided to a child's own family. I understand that that's probably the goal in the policy. I guess some information we've had is that, for better or worse, children will end up in foster care sometimes for years. Is that sometimes the case or often the case, or can you give some ballpark figure?
It is sometimes the case. It used to be very often the case. I think over the last 20 years, there's been a considerable movement both in law as well as in social practice to consider foster care as temporary and to make all efforts possible to get children into a permanent kind of situation. Public law 96-272, which we've been operating on for several years now, does require us to make every effort possible to return the child to their legal parent. And when that has been exhausted, then we move to considering other kinds of permanent situations for a child, whether that be by adoption, guardianship, or as last resort, for a long-term foster care relationship. The pressure is really on us to prove why a child can't be returned to their natural birth parent or legal parent. But I can't give you exact numbers of how many children will be raised in care any longer. It's much less. The vast majority of children that come into our custody are from one day to probably two and a half years in duration.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay, thank you. And again, we would look forward to your follow-up response.
I'd be happy to do that.
Appreciate it. Okay, we have Mr. and Mrs. Gary Blumert from St. Paul. Sorry I had to wait so long. Thanks for your patience. Do we have something from you folks too? I think we probably do. Okay, if you want to, you probably provided us with some materials here and some other documents. And if you want to summarize kind of the high points there, we will probably read it as you're summarizing the statement, and of course any additional comments you want to make. I don't know if you had the amended bill when you prepared your remarks, but I don't know if that necessarily affects the information you want to share with us, but please welcome and go right ahead.
Our case involves might have for after my parents divorced, my mother remarried, and as a result, my half brothers were my most families. At that time, I was about 18 years old. That marriage was unsuccessful, and by the time I was 3 years old, they were divorced, and Mike was placed into foster care. His father drifted, and he made a few sporadic visits, but by the time Mike was 5 years old, his father completely disappeared out of his life. By the time he was 7 years old, he had been moved repeatedly from foster home to foster home, or back to my mother and back into foster care again. My mother was unable to care for him properly because of chronic alcohol. When Mike was 7 years old, my mother remarried a third time to a Mr. Samuel Llewellyn, and was given custody of Michael with the understanding through Children's Services that Mr. Llewellyn had responsibility for his care. This marriage lasted for a period of about 2 years, a little longer, when Mr. Llewellyn filed for a divorce. At that time, he and Michael had developed a very strong father-son relationship, and he was ready, willing, and able to care for Michael, but he was informed that he had no standing and therefore couldn't consider leaving custody of the boy, therefore leaving him the only option of going back into foster care again. At this point, Mr. Llewellyn was very concerned about Mike's emotional stability, so he and his grandfather arranged for Mike to come and live with us. This was approved by Children's Services Division, and we became certified foster parents for a brief period. We discontinued this because Mr. Llewellyn had arranged for Michael's financial support. Now, by this time, Mike was 10 years old, and he was still a ward of the court. He'd never known stability, and he was an extremely nervous and emotionally unstable boy. My husband and I have been together for 10 years. We have 3 children. We're both employed. We have a home, and we're respected in our community. We're both free of police records for drug or alcohol addictions. My oldest boy, being of the same age as Michael, has made it easy for Mike to fit into our home environment. And Mike has expressed a great deal of love and compassion to us that I don't believe he could have shared in Boston. Mike has, as a result of all of these continual moves and instabilities, suffered extreme emotional insecurity. He's gone through repeated rejection, and he's afraid. His needs were obviously stability and nurturing, and we feel that we had been successful in providing those needs, and we have many witnesses willing to speak on our behalf. After Mike was with us 1 year, his father, who had disappeared when he was 5 years old, reappeared. At that time, Mike had little, if any, recollection of who his father was. His father's background had been marred by a serious alcohol problem and an extensive criminal record, which we don't know the details of, except that when it was presented in court, the attorney had to hold the computer printout over her head to prevent dragging on the floor. The father had previously asked for visitation, and that was granted, and that was something that we encouraged on the advice of Children's Services. And we encouraged Mike to establish a relationship with his father, that he had definitely expressed that he wanted to live with us. After a few months of visitation, his father filed for custody. At that point, Mike went into a rage and panic, and he told his father that he wouldn't visit him again unless he of excellent credibility. When Mike's attorney did attempt to present our case, she was told by the court that they would hear no more of the Lawrence because we have no standing. During the hearing, at this time Mike was 13 years old, he stressed in court that he did want to stay in our home. The father and his attorney made a position about alienating the boy from his father. This point was strongly denied by Mike. And an obvious lack of affection was displayed between Mike and his father during the hearing because they were engaging in a continuous name calling. But regardless, the father and his attorney persisted with the alienation and a general lack of care and affection on our part, points which we weren't allowed to refute because we had no standing. We consulted several competent attorneys and we were told the same thing. It would be a waste of time and money because we had no standing. So the court decision was based on Mike's father's decision or testimonies and Mike's testimonies, which obviously were discounted because of his immaturities. So Mike was removed from our home. We don't know exactly why, but we would assume that it was a threat of further alienation between him and his father. Mike's future case plan, as we told to us, was that he will remain in this foster home until school's out, and he will be moved to yet another foster home out of state near his father, where they will resume visitation. And if things go well, he'll be placed with his father. We feel that he's being thrown into another situation of uncertainties. He suffered, he has a great deal of resentment towards the establishment as a result of their inability to understand his needs. He doesn't anticipate the relationship with his father to work out, so he's already counting how many foster homes he'll end up in by the time he's 18 years of age. The boy has never been allowed and all the parents have as yet been able to provide this for him. We feel strongly that if we had standing and could have presented our case to the court, that we could have very easily prevented this tragedy from occurring.
Thank you. Mr. Boomer, did you want to add something?
I've got a letter here from Mike that I didn't have a chance to get it signed. He was gone over the weekend. I'd like to present it to you now. Briefly, it says that he would like to stay with us.
Okay.
Along with that testimony.
Thank you. If you want to share that with our administrator, we'll make sure that's made part of the record also. Let's see if there are any questions for either one of you. I'm a little unclear in terms of where custody is at this point. Does the mother still have technical custody, or was that something that the court terminated at any time?
No, it's never been terminated, but she's never been able to retain custody. And she has given up on drawing without revising custody. She was very supportive of my staying with us.
Okay. Was your, when CSD, I guess, acquiesced to the mother's desire and to what seemed to be the best situation, was it ever discussed in terms of whether or not this care was going to be temporary, or was it assumed that this was going to be until he reached...
That was just left. We had no idea how long he might have stayed.
And if I understood your statements correctly, do you... receive any compensation for this care that you're providing, or Are you just doing this?
Mike was receiving Social Security. We didn't receive any. For the first year, my mother sent out we didn't receive any compensation that we knew about expense. Mike started receiving the Social Security. And at that point, we started receiving a support payment through.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that the Social Security he was receiving was from his stepfather, who didn't have the standing in the court to get custody the first time around. He lived with us for 3.5 years, and the boy is now 14, and he's in this is his 11th move, and he's looking to at least two more before he's, well, by the time he's 15, he'll have at least one more with another one scheduled.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Kopetsky?
Thank you. I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear your answer in terms of support. Was it?